You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 315th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it's our 973rd episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of November 2nd, 2023. I'm your host, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
Tonight, we don't have a banner moment, but rather we honor the life of the man who is responsible for hanging three national championship banners, Coach Bob Knight. Coach Knight passed away Wednesday at the age of 83. People may have varying opinions of Coach Knight, but there is no denying his greatness as a basketball coach and leader of the Indiana basketball program from 1971 to 2000. Motion offense, man-to-man defense, winning. Many of us Indiana fans have spent the last 24 hours remembering Indiana basketball under the leadership of Coach Knight. We've been thinking about the wins, the one-liners, his appreciation of officiating, and his appreciation of the media, but also the connections many of us had with our family members and friends, which centered around Indiana basketball, coached by Bob Knight. We remember Channel 4, Martha the Mop Lady. Of course, 1976, 1981, 1987. I personally remember the 4,000 friends I met at the Fountain after the championship in 1987. We remember the feeling that we will not be beat. We remember Sweet Georgia Brown being played by the pep band as we enter Assembly Hall. And we remember those sport coats, those plaid pants, and then the sweaters. There will be a lot of stories, praises, criticisms of Coach Knight over the next few weeks in a variety of sources. But tonight, join us here at AC Radio in a night of celebrating all that was right about Coach Knight. May you rest in peace, Coach. Thanks for the memories. Okay, let me introduce our co-host for the for this evening. We're not going to have intro music. We're just going to start talking about Coach Knight. So joining me tonight will be Coach Tony Adragna and Ryan Phillips. And Ryan, we'll come to you first. Your thoughts on the passing of Coach Knight.
Well, you know, look, I wrote an article about it today for the Big Lead. I recommend anybody go read it about, you know, Coach Knight's legacy is complicated. And I think that I have a different perspective on him than you guys do, because I didn't grow up with him. I came to Indiana 3 years after he was gone. Obviously I knew Indiana basketball. I knew Coach Knight. I knew everything about it being on the West Coast. I mean, they were one of the national brands of college basketball. but I missed the, and I don't mean this in a negative context, but I missed the hero worship. I missed the sort of mythic status of him. He was a basketball coach, just like John Wooden was a basketball coach, just like Dean Smith was a basketball coach, Coach K, you know, those guys, to me. And I certainly got to know what Bob Knight meant to so many people when I arrived in Indiana. And over the last 20 years, pretty much from my first year in Indiana, I wound up being rather close to the program, whether covering it or knowing people who knew him or knowing, you know, people who were involved in the program. And it's been that way for more than 20 years now. And I've grown an appreciation for everybody's personal stories about him, the good and the bad. And there are two things I want to talk about, and they're both stories about him. And one was, I won't say who it was because of what he said, but I was working out at my gym in San Diego, and I was wearing an Indiana shirt, as I do every time I go exercise. And somebody came up to me, it was an older gentleman, and he said, did you go to Indiana? And it's strange running into somebody in San Diego who went to Indiana. And And I said, yeah, I did. And we started talking and told him I was in sports media and all this. And he said, oh, and he kind of sheepishly, he didn't want to tell me, but he said, I was on the 1960 Indiana basketball team. And you guys would all know who he was, but I'm going to leave his name out. And so I started asking about that season. I knew Ohio State had won the national title and there were some games between them. And that basically decided who was going to win, going to go to the tournament and potentially just win the national title. And he gushed about Jerry Lucas and John Havlicek. And then I asked him, well, what about Knight? And he just, his face just sank. And he was, and then he kind of grinned and he was like, that guy would not stop effing talking during the game, even when he was sitting on the bench. He's like, and then he'd get in, he'd just run into everybody. He's like, he had no skill. And then he stopped and he kind of looked at me. He's like, but he was brilliant. He was brilliant. And that was all he said. And I think that is Coach Knight. I mean, he was kind of a bull in the china shop. And he was very loud and you knew he was in the room. And he also was a genius. And for better or worse, those things are what defines Coach Knight. And the one other story I'll tell is my dad got a chance to listen to Jerry Lucas speak, and they were at Ohio State at the same time. Jerry Lucas, Hall of Famer, 3-time All-American, led Ohio State to a national championship. And I'm not sure if they were roommates or they were just close. I don't remember that part of the story, but he said that Lucas would talk about how he'd go play and he'd play 35 minutes and just be exhausted. And he's, you know, leading them to victories and everything. And Knight would barely play. He'd be on the bench. And he'd go back to his room at night. And Jerry Lucas didn't want to think about basketball after, you know, putting in so much. He just wanted to sleep. And Knight would keep him up all night asking about trying to get him to talk about every single play from the play. With an encyclopedic memory, he'd remember where everybody was every time. Even a play where nobody scored or anything. He would want to dissect every little permutation of the game. And Lucas was just like, dude, I just want to go to bed. And Knight would keep him up all night going over every single thing. And again, that's Bob Knight. I mean, he was a genius, just an absolute genius who took the motion offense that he didn't. A lot of people think he invented it. He didn't. He just perfected it and was able to take something that existed and make it. And I'll say this as somebody from the outside looking in, watching his teams play, I always felt when Indiana was at its best, it was like music and he was the conductor. Those teams were almost perfect when they were run right. And so the respect I have for him as a basketball mind is tremendous. There's other things that it for another time to discuss about his legacy. But if we're just remembering the man who brought joy to a lot of people that I hold dear, his ability as a coach and on the basketball court was just unparalleled. And people have said it today. He might be the greatest coach of all time. It's hard to quantify who, what, where, how you line those guys up. But the fact that he's in that conversation says all you need to know.
And Tony Adranya, creator and the innovator of the film room in our community. Your thoughts on the passing of Coach Knight when you heard that yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people knew was, you know, on the horizon, you know, for the last couple of months. And it's still shocking when you read it, when you see it, when you know that he's not around, just like, you know, any death. And it's, you know, immediately goes back to like reflection and, you know, just like everybody else. I mean, you saw it on Twitter all day. You know, I think we've all talked about it in some capacity, perhaps all day, to folks around us, our friends, our families, you know. And it's just, it's one of those things where, for, you know, so for me, I was born in 1990. You know, I've not seen an IU national championship. I was around for 10 years of the Bob Knight era. My family had just moved to Indiana. They were all born in Illinois in 1989, so they weren't huge IU fans until my oldest sister went to IU in 1998. And, you know, that's when I got interested in the IU basketball program. So for me, you know, my growing up wasn't like, you know, Bob Knight was revered or anything like that. It was kind of absorbed. And, you know, I wrote about it today in the film room. You know, my first memory of Bob Knight was when he was fired. Like, that's the one, like, I remember my sister went and she was holding up her phone and I could hear the crowd. and all kinds of different things. And like, that's my first memory, but now I know so much about him. And it really started when I started coaching basketball myself. My first year, I was handed the middle school program as a head coach. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I was going to know everything, as we all do when we're young and dumb. And I remember just kind of sitting there after our first game, we had gotten thumped. We looked terrible. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so like the first thing that popped in my head, it was just like, best coach all times, Bob Knight. I'm just going to look for any and every resource I can find from Bob Knight. And I think I shared four or five today in the film room of just like awesome, like just for leadership, not even coaching basketball. It could be coaching football. It could be leading a company. Like everything he said and did in terms of how he operated on all the resources I found have helped me in my professional career as much as they helped me in coaching. And again, there's layers to him, just like there is to every individual in the world. But at the end of the day, the guy was an absolute basketball tactician. I've watched hundreds and hundreds of old IU games. Shout out to Galen Clavio for the numerous on YouTube. But and so I understand, you know, that who Coach Knight was in the basketball community. And then, you know, all my friends and families and just, you know, growing into a man and understanding how much he meant to so many people. You know, it's a sad day, and you see the grief in so many folks that were brought joy by the teams that Bob Knight coached. You know, and that's been my biggest takeaway today. I'm absolutely sad to hear of Coach Knight's passing, but really I'm more empathetic for the folks that, you know, some of their core memories of their life were brought to them because of Coach Knight and the grief that they have now. So that's kind of where I'm at today and my initial thoughts on it.
Yeah. You know, Brian, one thing that I wanted to add, and yes, it's a formal occasion. I'm calling you Brian, not Coach.
That's all right.
I, a couple years ago, it was 2020, we had planned the meetup for the Purdue game months ahead of time. And we just said, you know what, let's just do it for Purdue. I think that'll be fun. We'll do a post-game show, all that. And about a week beforehand, we started getting whispers. It was a surprise. But a week beforehand, it was kind of leaked to us, as we'd all already planned to be there, had our reservations and everything, that Knight was going to come back at halftime. And that had been whispered that it was going to happen previously and didn't, because we've been told the same thing a few months earlier. I remember that weekend we got into town and we were all at Nick's hanging out, and we look across the table and Keith Smart and Dean Garrett are sitting at the edge of the bar at Nick's, and we're like, oh, he's coming back. And you started seeing players filtering through Nick's, old, you know, all-time greats. And, you know, I remember being at that halftime, and a few dozen of his players came back just for that. I mean, it felt like there were 100 players on the floor. I don't remember what the exact numbers were. And then to see him come back, I mean, I'm so lucky that I got to be there for that. And I feel, you know, I watching on TV for so many people, I'm sure was cathartic and was great for them. But being able to be there and feel that, and I'm sad that they couldn't give him a better game. You know, and I felt that crowd was ready to be the loudest, you know, ever, and they wound up just losing. But just that moment, seeing him come back out on the floor and embrace his players, and I didn't just feel good for him. I didn't just feel good for the program. I felt good for all of those players who had felt like they couldn't come back to Indiana because they might have been betraying their coach, and so many of them had not been back. And the fact that was just sort of a melting of ice, and sort of everybody came together. And now, given that he's passed away, we were so lucky that got to happen, because there's a world in which that never happens. Even if he's forgiven people, even if he's hanging out at baseball games or whatever, there's a world in which he never gets that moment. And I think we're all very lucky that happened when it did. And he got to spend the last couple years visiting practice and things like that, as it should have long been.
Yeah. You both bring up a couple things where his passing hit me. Number one was the family connections. You know, I remember, it takes you back to how my dad and I lost my dad in 2004. My dad sat me down when I was 8 or 9 years old and said, hey, there's this coach at Indiana, and he's very disciplined, and he's running good defense, and we're going to sit down and turn on Channel 4 every time they play. And I've said numerous times on the show and that, you know, I've been alive for the last three championships, and I remember seeing them. And then when your coach, Bob Knight, you see him for that success. And from far away, you don't hear all the other stuff. And he's just the coach that gets the players to play in a way. And that's meaningful and a championship style of play. But when you hear of that passing, it automatically brought me back to all those memories of my dad and I watching games together. The phone call he made to me the night of the championship game in 1987. I was a sophomore. He asked me if I had milk and cookies ready.
And I said, you remember that conversation, Coach? Because I'm kind of disappointed if you do.
No, I do because it was so great. And there were two conversations with my dad. One was, do you have your milk and cookies ready? I said, Dad, I'm not going to lie. The keg is on ice, and we're ready to roll. And then afterwards, I'd stayed up all night, made it to the fountain, walked to campus the next day, and he called and he goes, just tell me what it was like. Just tell me. And I mean, I'll get choked up, you know. Coach Knight was able to give me that with my dad. And I know the legacy stuff needs to be talked about, and at some point all of that is real and true and part of who Coach Knight is. But his success gave something to my dad and I that lasted until dad passed away, and it's still with us, you know, because when I go down and walk in Assembly Hall, I do it for my dad. I think those are things that fans are going through too. And you know, the fans that maybe are on the other end of the spectrum and really were bothered by Coach Knight, that they're okay too. They have that right to do that. But I think there's a lot of us who had those family type of memories. And I was at that Purdue game, and to see his look and those players look as a coach, Tony, you know this too. The thing that I miss most about not coaching is that player coach interaction. And they were happy to have him back in the hall, and he was really happy. I was glad that he could get to a point of forgiveness, at least to come back. I think that was an important thing. But, you know, there's just so much from the basketball, from the behind-the-scenes things that he did that he never got credit for, to the love of his players that make for a great story. Piece of that in his memories. So we're going to talk a lot about that all segment. We got Rick Bozich coming on here in segment two. We're going to go through a lot of memories. Chat, put your thoughts in there. It's good. It's helpful. It's cathartic to share those things. And at the end, we didn't have many questions in the new Substack thing, but if you have something, we will address that maybe on the back end. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, there is a lot of talk about his legacy today, and we won't get, again, too deep into specifics. But I will say that I think the lesson of Coach Knight, for me at least, is that human beings are complex, like all of us. He was complicated. He wasn't one thing. You know, he wasn't just this coach. He wasn't just this guy that had these terrible reports about him. He wasn't just this guy who raised millions for charity. He wasn't just this. He wasn't just a dad. Like, he had so many aspects to who he was. And I think judging him on one of those aspects without considering the others, even if it's good as opposed to bad or bad opposed to good, like, it's, you wouldn't want to be judged that way either. And so I do think that he's a very complex, and maybe he's like everybody else, but more so, I think, is the Bob Knight thing. And I just think that he was human, and he was one of the most human people I've ever sort of covered or talked about or researched. I mean, he was as flawed as the rest of us. And his flaws were just prominently on display, as were his great qualities. So I think that, you know, it's a confusing thing to talk about for many people, and that's never going to change. We're going to have this conversation forever about him. But I think that, you know, over the last 24 hours, just seeing how much he meant to so many people is, I think would make him happy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's the most important thing right now, is how many staggering numbers of people he affected and either brought to basketball, or like you and your dad brought you guys together, or the product he produced, how it changed lives. And so I think it's really important to remember that at a time like this, is this was a guy who had an impact on a lot of people. And
Tony, I'm gonna come back.
Yeah, I'm go ahead.
Sorry.
I read
so many things and watched so many posts and everything. I'm confused. I want to give appropriate sourcing to, but there was a line that said he was who he was. It might have been in the Athletic or the Indy Star. Two great articles, by the way. You know, he was who he was, and that's a beauty, because sometimes we all are guilty of trying to be something we're not, to fit in here or to meet this, you know, characteristic or qualification that we think he was who he was, and that's an honorable thing. Tony, I'm going to do some stuff here, some housekeeping here, but I'm going to come to you right afterwards. I want to know from a basketball coach, what is a one or two of your major takeaways when you did that study? I know I'm going to go watch the film room, but if you could give a little highlight of that, or just share something coaching perspective, because I blame Coach Knight for my stubbornness with man-to-man defense and refusing to play zone. It probably cost me a few games in my high school career. But
if only you'd been a Syracuse fan.
and I'm sure as hell glad right now that I didn't cave in and play too much zone. But here's what we're going to do tonight on the show. We got some Hoosier headlines, just some information about how Indiana is going to honor Coach Knight and a couple of things in-house with the Back Home Network. Segment two is going to be all remembering Coach Knight. We're going to go back and tell some stories. Rick Bozich, who was there as a student reporter, will join us and share some of his stories. And then segment three, if we have any questions in the chat or anything like that, we'll wrap that up. We do need to talk about our presenting sponsor. I'm not going to play the music or anything. I don't think that's just appropriate tonight. But this edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like everything else on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel. You know the story. A lot of a good collegiate gear, even some Indianapolis Colts stuff, bomber jackets and all that. You know it's good quality. They're our friends. We appreciate them. You know, go to homefieldapparel.com. Home 23, all that stuff. Thanks to Home Field. But we're going to move on tonight and talk about our headlines. So just a little bit about what we read. Some statements have come out. I've gotten some in the email and social media. Indiana will honor the memory of Coach Knight by wearing an RMK patch with three stars for his three championships on both men's and women's team. And Coach Allen said that I think they're going to wear a decal on their helmets as well, honoring Coach. There will be a moment of silence before Friday's game against Marion and on Saturday in advance of the IU football game. Also, Friday night's game against Marion, there will be quotes from former players, coaches, managers, staff members, other people involved who have been around Coach Knight. They'll be showcased in Assembly Hall on the video board during pregame and timeouts throughout the game. And I think they'll be doing a lot of that honoring throughout the year is what I'm reading. And then out of respect for the family's wishes and desire for privacy, there's not going to be a public a memorial planned by IU Athletics or the Indiana University. There are some places to donate to Alzheimer's and University of Marion if you're looking to make a donation in Coach Knight's name. I do want to take the time to say this. Rivalries, you know, the Purdue people up here were awesome today to me. I mean, a lot of people came in my room. I got emails. These are some of the diehard people that just annoy the crap out of me on a day-to-day basis. But they put that beside, you know, coming in, checking on me, and doing those things. And then the moment of silence before the Purdue exhibition game, you know, they'll go by, hopefully back to that awesome, awful cheer that they do about us. But for a moment there, there was a lot of class that I do appreciate from them. From the Back Home Network, During the Work is back up and running. Their first show was last night. If you want to go catch that in our Substack, we have some new stuff coming. We have a new podcast here coming up. We have our new place, assemblycall.substack.com, where we're locating all our paid community and some free information. So make sure you check that out. And Indiana will be honoring Bill Garrett at the season opener against Florida Gulf Coast next Tuesday. So, okay, Tony, coming back to you real quick, and then we'll take a quick break and get Rick Bozich in to join us for segment two. Coaching, what did you take away in your study there of Coach Knight?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. And what's funny is, like, the clips that I showcased were 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 6 minutes. There is one that's an hour and a half. But, you know, there's so much in, like, a six-minute frame where you're just, like, constantly jotting down notes of, like, wow, I never thought of that. So one that stands out to me, because I feel like most people that have coached will understand or played, was, you know, most of it's just by nature. Like, you heard your coach say it, so then you say it as a coach. But offense to defense, defense out. That's how you rotate basically through a drill. Offense to defense, defense out. So, like, I've always done that. I never really thought about why I've done that. Well, in one of his, or why coaches do that, but Bob Knight specifically said in one of his videos that he's that meticulous about it because you're going to play offense, and then when you're on defense, you're going to be a little bit tired, and he wants you to play defense tired, and that's why he has a defense. You go second defense, and then you rotate out. Like, I never thought about that, but he was so meticulous in how he designed his practices, how he just in every single thing that he did, and, you know, part of that's the military background of him, but, I mean, he was so meticulous in his preparation for every single thing that he did that he thought about that. You know, I just did it because it, you know, is what my coach in high school did, and it had a nice little ring to it. But, you know, he thought about that. So that was something that was, you know, really interesting to me. You know, he had said constantly emphasize points going from one drill to another. What we work on today is what we're going to work on tomorrow. So essentially saying, like, what's important to the team to win, we're not going to just work on it once and then it's forgotten about. It's emphasized every single day. And, you know, says you are what you emphasize. So whatever the points are that Indiana basketball was going to be good at, the team was getting those emphasized day in, day out with lots of enthusiasm, if you will, from Coach Knight. So those were a couple other funny quotes that I had jotted down in my notes. He was getting mad at Uwe on something because they were supposed to be doing game like shots. And Uwe, you know, was just kind of half-assing it, essentially, for lack of better terms. And so he just starts screaming at Uwe, pretend that King Kong's guarding you, like just screaming about King Kong in practice. And so that was pretty funny. And then he said, you know, he said there was a couple times our team would lose two or three games in a row. And he wanted them to know that he cared, but like he had a message for them. So a message I had never heard before, and maybe it's just because I'm young and naive, but that he said when the team had lost a couple games in a row that he told them was, when you're up to your ass in alligators, remind yourself that your initial objective was to drain swamp. And that's really, you know, I've never heard that one before. And the metaphor there is, you know, interesting to me because I hadn't heard it, but it sends the message home of, you know, you're fighting through adversity and it's really hard to get lost in the minute details, but, you know, let's see the bigger picture of what we're trying to accomplish here. And that's draining the swamp. So those are a couple of big ones. You know, if you want 70% results, you can't take 40% shots. You know, essentially saying that, you know, if you're going to go half speed at something, or if you're going to do something poorly, you can't expect in your preparation, you can't expect to play well the next day. And then the last one, you know, you got to be a flexible leader if you're going to be an effective leader. And I think that's what he doesn't get enough credit for, because yes, he had the motion offense. Yes, he had the man-to-man defense, but, you know, a lot of people forget they beat the UNLV running Rebels by running right with them. Yeah. You know,
and no one and thought so, that was going to happen. They thought
exactly.
It was going to slow down.
Exactly. So yeah, those are some big ones there.
If you're a coach in Indiana, you know, I go back to my practice plans. There is so much Coach Knight, been to his coaching clinics, just a world of information from just an excellent basketball mind. But stick with us here on Assembly Call Radio. In the next segment, Rick Bozich will join us, and we continue to remember Coach Bob Knight. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Rick. How we doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, man. I listen to every episode, so
appreciate it.
Love to always have you, Rick. Your story was great today, by the way.
We're just going to go with the flow. I got a couple topics in there if we need them, but you know, we'll feed off you, and we'll just go around about, stay as long as you want.
Real quick, Brian, Tony, your mic is picking up everything. So just when you're not talking, be sure to mute, because you were clicking something and you could hear it. I don't know why your mic was so sensitive this time, but it was.
Is it still? I had on like an echo cancellation, and I don't know if that was messing with it.
I can hear a little, but it's not as bad now, but it was really. So just, yeah, I mean, just be sure to mute when you're off. But it's not like huge, but you can definitely hear it. So gotcha. More about podcast.
Yep, for sure. Sounds good.
All right, here we go, gentlemen.
Let's get into it.
Segment two.
Hi, this is AJ Moyer. What's the only thing better than upsetting Duke in the Sweet 16? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach for the assembly call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Welcome back to the assembly call. I'm Brian Tonsoni here with Ryan Phillips and Coach Adranya. And joining us is another part of that clip, but with Ryan Phillips, Coach Adranya, and Rick Bozich, as we remember Coach Knight. Bob Knight passed away yesterday at the age of 83, and we're just spending the night remembering some of the positive contributions, a lot of the positive contributions that Coach Knight made to Indiana University, to the game of basketball, and just to the people that that he touched in this night of remembrance. Rick, welcome. Your initial thoughts when you heard the word. We all kind of knew it was headed in this direction, but how are you feeling about the passing of Coach Knight?
Just a lot of different emotions and memories just flowing. Such an important – I mean, he's the biggest – sports personality that has been in my entire career, because I've worked in this area my entire career, and going to IU. I started as a freshman in 1971, which was the year he started, and Assembly Hall opened. A lot of my friends are friends I made in college and follow IU basketball. We talk about IU basketball all year round, and we always talked about Coach Knight and, you know, watched the way his entire career unfolded and what happened. And, you know, just, I talked to a lot of him on the phone today, just in texting about, you know, remember this day, the time he shot the starter's pistol at Russ Brown, or remember the time that I was on the plane and I was in Iowa and I showed up late for the bus by about 10 minutes and they almost left me in the parking lot in Iowa City, and on and on and on.
A classic Knight move, from what I've heard from other journalists.
Yeah, I mean, so, and Bob Hamill is a guy I worked for 18 months, and nobody knows Bob Hamill. I mean, Bob Knight better than Bob Hamill. They were best friends. I worked at the – here's a funny story. I worked at the Herald Telephone for a year and a half, and I covered Edgewood High School for a while, and then Bob would let me come to IU games and do sidebars. And Bob Knight and Bob Hamill were really best friends. They'd go to high school basketball games together, looking at recruits. They'd go out after a game. Bob Hamill would come back to the paper and write a story. There weren't computers back then. There were typewriters. They'd go get, you know, a piece of cherry pie and a glass of milk somewhere, because neither guy was a drinker. And one night I was in the office writing up a story about the Edgewood High School Mustangs, a Selectric typewriter. And I noticed this huge imposing figure behind my right shoulder, and it's Coach Knight. And he reached down and grabbed the piece of paper out of the typewriter and pulled it out. And he goes, "This might be the biggest piece of crap I've ever read," and wadded it up in a paper ball and threw it in the trash. And I was like, and he slapped me on the back and goes, "Just kidding. Get back to work, kid."
You're like, Coach, I know that, but hey.
I mean, you know, I could go on forever.
So you put that piece of paper back in and started over again.
I should have saved it and kept it. You know, I still had the program from the first game. I did go to the first game and sit in the balcony against Ball State. And I remember the players on that team. I wrote about some in my column. But, you know, Indiana had a long dry spell. And then, you know, Lou Watson was the coach, and then they got Jerry Oliver, and they brought McGinnis in and Downing from Indianapolis, Washington. Everybody thought everything was going to, you know, take off, and it didn't. And they made a change and brought Coach Knight in, and then McGinnis went pro. He didn't get to coach McGinnis. He got to coach Downing. And that first team, he had like Downing, Bootsy White, Kim Pemberton, John Ritter, who was an undersized guy who played forward and could really shoot, Frank Wilson, who later became a doctor. Jerry Memring was another guy who still comes to the games, at least he used to, sit there opposite the visiting bench. And they weren't super talented, but, man, you'd go in there and it's like, these guys, man, they really play hard. They really play defense. They set screens. It was a different way for Indiana to play basketball. And I remember clearly, I think it was the fourth game. I looked it up yesterday. It was the fourth game that first year Indiana played Kentucky at Freedom Hall down here. And I was a student. And back then, you know, the games were on Channel 4. And in the dorm, there's one TV. It was in the common area of different parts. I lived in Wright Quad. And we all went down there and watched the game on black and white TV. And Indiana upset a number 7 Kentucky team that was really good with Steve Downing. And then people saying, this dude can coach. I mean, this dude, it was like 90-89 was the score. And they had already beaten Kansas, which was ranked number 14. And then they beat Kentucky. And they didn't go to the tournament that year because in those days only one team went, but they did go to the NIT. And then the next year is when it really, you know, he got Buckner and, you know, people, they talk about the 3 championship teams, but his coaching job in 73, he had Jimmy Cruz and Quinn Buckner, freshman guards, and they went to the Final Four and had UCLA on the ropes and Steve Downing got a bad call or they might have won that game. So, I mean, he showed very early that this dude was a coach.
Well, it is interesting. He had a lot of near misses. I mean, yeah. You know, yeah. 73, 75. You could say 80 was one of his best teams to not win a championship.
If Woodson hadn't hurt his back, they might have won a championship.
93.
If Alan doesn't hurt his knee, yeah. Might have won a championship.
And then he gets fired in 2000. And 2002 was the year that team with, you know, all respect to Mike Davis, with the right coaching and right system might be a championship team. So you think about his record might have been even far greater than we look at it now. Rick, you were obviously around in 2000 when he was let go. Did you ever think he would come back? I know 2020 we were all there. I mean, did you think that would happen eventually? A lot, because I've talked to a lot of people say eventually it was going to happen, and I've talked to a lot of people said not. Yeah, I thought hell would freeze over first, and I was just curious at what your thought was on that.
You know, I did not think he would come back. And I say that from talking to other people. Dick Vitale tried relentlessly to get him to come back. And
every year.
Like, if you ask me that one more time, I'm never going to talk to you again. Quit bringing it up. You know, I remember Billis, I asked him about it once. He didn't think it was going to happen. I talked to Quinn Buckner and, you know, he didn't say it wasn't going to happen. But I remember talking to him very clearly in 2016 when they had the anniversary of the 76 team, and Quinn and Bobby Wilkerson and Scott May were there, and Quinn said, you know, he's not going to come, he doesn't want to come, and I didn't think it was going to happen, but you know, I'm very happy that it did happen.
I think we all are,
because yeah. Otherwise this would be just a different mood about everything, a different conversation. Because you guys were there, I think, that night, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and we were just talking about before you came on. We had planned that for like 8 months, and just happened to be there. And I remember, and I'll tell you, I was just telling it because there earlier in that season there had been a rumor he was going to show up for a right. game, and then last minute it all kind of went away. And then we all went to Knicks on that Friday night, and Saturday was the day, and we looked across the bar and Keith Smart, Dean Garrett are there. And then we start seeing other guys filter in and we all just look at each other like, oh my God, it's going to happen. And yeah. It was just a staggering moment, you know, to be there, because again, I'm with you. The people I talked to all said, it's not going to happen. Like, you know, he might make peace with it at some point and talk to some people, but he's not going to walk out on that court ever again. And you're right. And that's the reason I asked is because I think this day would be a lot different if that hadn't happened. So I'm thankful to not only him, but all the people who worked, from what I understand, extremely hard to make that happen, to bring him home and make it feel like he was welcome.
I mean, Pat Knight, Bob Hamill, Dr. Rink, Scott Dolson, I mean, Mike Woodson, Randy Whitman, Quinn Buckner, all those guys were involved. It took a lot of people to get that done. And, I know that my son has the Inside the Hall website, as you guys know, and that video, I think he's told me his video alone of that has been viewed over a million times. I mean,
I'm shocked it's the only one that has the full thing on it anywhere. And I've watched it myself. I'm a number of those. I don't know how many, but a lot.
Yeah. Rick, you've been around Coach Knight in a way that the rest of us haven't. What's something that we wouldn't know that is part of that good Coach Knight behind the scenes that he didn't want to get credit for, that a lot of us did not see? Is there a story or two or a remembrance of something, or in general, what did he do? Because, man, he really built a bond with his players and the people who were close, and a lot of loyalty. And we miss that as fans and coaches from afar. The good side of Coach Knight.
I mean, there's an event down here every year, and, you know, you guys follow it from afar. It's the only time really Mike Woodson or the coaches talk in the offseason at Huber's. And that started with Bob Knight. He began coming down here in Southern Indiana because he had a lot of friends here. There was a guy, an accountant in New Albany named Bob Shine, who did his taxes, and Ned Fow, who's been on the IU athletics board. His name's on the golf course at IU. He was big friends with Coach Knight, and he would come down here and do a talk every year. The media would not be invited, but he would talk about IU basketball and all different things going on in college sports. And there'd be you'd have to pay to go. And he used it as a fundraiser for the IU library. And that just grew into this huge event. Now they have 1,000 people come to it every year, and the media is invited. I can think of, you know, this is something that stuck with me because his son lives in my neighborhood. Ralph Beard was a great basketball player at the University of Kentucky who got suspended from playing in the NBA back then because he was accused of being in a point shaving thing at UK, and UK kind of disassociated themselves from him. And Coach Knight was such a big student of history and he knew what a great player Ralph Beard was, that he reached out to Ralph Beard and would have him come to IU games and have him come to IU practices and made him feel welcome because Coach Knight had a huge appreciation for his elders. He really, Pete Newley always talked about Claire B., Fred Taylor, older sports writers he usually respected more than younger ones. So Ralph Beard became a big part of Indiana basketball. I mean, there's a bunch of stories like that where, you know, he would make people feel welcome or important around IU.
He did that with some coaches too that had fallen out of favor.
Norm Ellenberger were both guys who got in trouble and ended up being on his staff. I mean, Tate Locke was involved in a cheating scandal at Clemson, and Bob Knight brought him back and had him on the IU staff. So, he did that for sure. No doubt about it. And, you know, so many coaches that came through when I was there, it was the first year it was Donawald and Bliss and Weltlich. All those guys went on to become head coaches somewhere. Tom Miller, Gimelstob. I mean, he was Coach K just pumping. Coach K was a grad assistant when I was a senior at IU.
Yeah. And I remember when Coach K came to IU my senior year. It was that 2005 game against Duke. And he just, I remember after the game, because that was, as people talk about, it was one of the loudest crowds they'd ever heard at Assembly Hall. And afterwards, he just gushed for about 10 minutes about not only Knight, obviously, but he talked about Knight extensively. He gushed about Indiana and the program and what Knight built and how that launched him and how that building and all of that stuff. And, you know, he credited Knight with building all of that, building that following and building that energy. What is one thing, I know there's so many different teams over the years, so many different players, so many different, you know, combinations of players even. What is something that stands out to you that you thought was a common thread about his teams that you covered?
The preparation, and playing the game the way that he thought was the right way. He didn't put up with a lot of, what Al McGuire back in the day would call French pastry. Like, here's the way we're going to do this. You're going to set the screen in a certain way, and you're going to cut here, and you're going to help and recover here. And that's the way we're going to do it. You're not going to go up and try some kind of fancy dunk shot. Just lay the ball in, or just do a regular dunk. Don't try and do some ridiculous thing and embarrass yourself. Because if you did, you're going to, ass meets bench, as we know.
Right? Love that quote.
He'd have you out before you hit the floor. It's...
Yeah, I mean, so many different guys. The way that he, I don't know. I mean, some of the guys that he turned – Tommy Abernathy was a great example to me. That Tommy Abernathy was a really good high school player. He wasn't a – he was an Indiana All-Star, but he wasn't like – wouldn't have been some five. He would have been a three-star recruit. He would have been, a decent guy. And he came into Indiana and was a glue guy. And by the time – he's the guy who stepped in to replace Steve Green in the 76 team, and he ended up being a really good player and playing in the NBA for a while. He, made Tommy Abernathy take that next step and believe that he could do things like that. I always go back to the first, Steve Green and John Laskowski were part of his first recruiting class, and he got the job pretty late. And Knight showed right off the bat, I'm going to recruit kids from the state of Indiana. He got Laz. He got Green from Silver Creek. Laz was South Bend St. Joseph. Steve Allfeld, Dr. Steve Allfeld, who's from Wabash, and John Campster was from Rossville. And he brought those guys in. None of them were really big-time recruits, but he won with those guys. I mean, that just the way he could take – he's one of those guys, like we talk about Bear Bryant, he could take his guys and beat you, and he can take your guys and beat you.
Yeah, it was about the system, not just the players. And the players made it better, but
talking about that first recruiting class, because I wasn't around, but I've from what I've gathered, Knight was kind of an underwhelming hire for what people thought. I think Al McGuire was like on the short list of folks that people thought Indiana might go after, but I'm just curious on kind of the vibe and when IU Nation or Hoosier Nation or whatever was like, okay, we got a good one.
Yeah, I mean, it was that second year when they went to the Final Four with Buckner, Cruz, Steve Downing, and good Steve Green, and Ritter might have been the other starter. I don't remember. Buckner and Downing played, briefly in the NBA, not for very long. Buckner played a long time in the NBA, but the rest of those guys weren't superstar players. And then, obviously, the 74 team lost the one-game playoff to go to the NCAA tournament to Michigan, which was played in Champaign, Illinois. And then the 75 team, which was my senior year, was just a juggernaut. If you go back and check the scores from that team, they've just obliterated people. They were beating teams like 94 to 49 and things like that. And they played a good schedule. And at that point, they went 18-0 in back-to-back seasons in the Big Ten.
Amazing. Still, I think one of the greatest accomplishments of college basketball history is not only that, but
just like sports history.
One game in 2 years, and it's with your best player injured.
And they might have won that game if he hadn't started Scott May. He admitted later he made a mistake.
Yeah.
May had been out for like 3 or 4 weeks because he broke his arm at Purdue.
Yeah.
And then they won their first two NCAA tournament games, and they played Kentucky and Dayton and only lost 92-90. And it's great. Steve Allfeld still has – he showed this to me. I talk to him every time I go up there because we were in the same year. And he still has on his phone a picture – of a Kentucky player that was standing out of bounds that wasn't called. And if that call would have been made, Indiana might have won the game. I don't know if you read Feinstein's
review
today, and Hamill told me this, but that loss burned Coach Knight more than any loss in his career.
Yeah.
And
this is,
after that game, after they won the championship in 76, Hamill said, "Well, you did it. You got the title." And Knight's response was, "Should have had two."
that's a very Bob Knight response. I think my favorite scene from Season on a Brink is that last one with Alford in the locker room, and he knows his coach so well that he finally compliments him and he finally gets this validation, And then Knight leaves the room and he goes, "Nah, Damon Bailey would have done it better." You know, like that's just, it's just such a, and Damon Bailey, for those who don't know, was in high school at the time, but Knight would always say that Bailey was better than everybody on his team. And they just won a national title and Alford's just like, "Yeah, Bailey would have done it better." It's just that nobody has ever known their coach better than that sentence, quite frankly.
No doubt about it.
So we could kind of go around the horn on this one, but he was a great basketball mind. Tony brought this up at the end of segment one about how flexible he was. Everyone talks about discipline, and yes, he was man-to-man and motion, but that 1987 game when he ran UNLV out of that semifinal was an example of being flexible. The giving Isaiah Thomas a little more freedom than he normally would have was that is why I think he was a basketball genius, not just refining the motion offense, but, and Rick, you brought up too, that he won with players that a lot of people couldn't win with. But that was his genius. What do we think here as a panel? What was his best basketball strategy, best example of that mind? I'll start with Tony and then Ryan and come back and end with you, Rick, real quick. What one attribute of basketball skill that he taught do you think was his very best attribute?
Mine isn't even a skill, but it's the buy-in that he got day in, day out to, you know, it's the old sum of the parts is greater than the whole type mentality, but the buy-in that he got from each and every individual on his team to, you know, somebody just mentioned it. He had one NBA All-Star ever on any team and Isaiah Thomas. So for me, that's so hard to do as a coach to get, you know, all of these individuals to buy in for the greater good. And, you know, he had a demanding way about him for sure. But, you know, that at the same time, like, you know, he always said that he had an exercise where he would say, name your two best teachers you've ever had in your life. And players would write down the two. And he would say, now write down your two most demanding teachers you had in your life. And he said, unequivocally, it was almost always the same two. And so, you know, and then that was his way to say, like, look, I'm going to be demanding to you and you're going to appreciate it later, which they
you're
did.
Ready to
and
add
they,
somebody to the list.
Yeah. And they did. Like, that's the thing is they did. And the loyalty is there. And you see in the outpouring of support, you know, throughout these last 24 hours or so and just the loyalty that he had. And Mike Woodson mentioned it today. They said, what's the number one thing you take away from Coach Knight that you now implement in your coaching career? And he said that I want my players to know I will always be here for you. And that's completely outside of basketball. You know, that's a life skill that he's teaching. And so just have, again, it goes back to just the buy-in of the whole program. And it truly is a family, and you know we're going to get on you, and he's going to get on you. But at the same time, you know it's for the greater good, and that's not easy to do. And he was a master at it.
But it is for basketball, me, also, and you,
absolutely.
You know, when you get that buy-in as a coach, and those guys trust you, and they can put up with the good, the bad, whatever's going on, they're going to put up with that adversity on the floor too. So yes, it was in and out of that program, to be honest with you. Ryan, your thoughts about the basketball genius that he was?
For me, it comes down to development. And it wasn't just developing guys on the court, it was developing guys off the court. Look how many wildly successful people he coached who wound up being wildly successful in things other than basketball. He created, or he helped to develop. I won't give him all the credit because those people have parents and things as well and previous teachers. But he developed people as well as anything. And I think the two things he would take pride in that go hand in hand with that is he didn't cheat and everybody graduated. And that goes into development. You're developing the right people. They didn't violate. He hated the NCAA for so many reasons, but he never broke their rules. And he also graduated everybody. And those guys, whether it was from his teaching or what, the lion's share of those guys, the mass majority of those guys went on to be successful in life after coaching him. Because quite frankly, if you could survive Hurricane Knight, you could probably survive anything out in the world. So I think that that to me is the thing that stands out the most about him. And that is a basketball thing as well, because it translates to the court. If everybody's bought in, everybody's being taught, everybody's being developed, that translates.
Yeah. And I'd say don't forget the student managers because they're a part of that too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Part of that group. Cool. You can look at the superintendent of schools in Louisville is a former IU student manager, Lawrence Frank. You can go on and on, all the different IU student managers who have been successful in life. I would say it was his ability to know what he wanted in players, what qualities that were important, and the physical wasn't always the most, the mental was just as important. Was this a player who was willing to be an Indiana basketball player and do the things that he expected Indiana basketball players to do, where it really was about the name on the front because the names never went on the back. He wasn't going to take some guy who, just because he was a great player, who was going to be about him. He would rather take a little bit lesser player who was going to be coachable and fit into the system and respond to his teaching. And it didn't always work. Sometimes guys thought they could handle it but couldn't. But he wasn't going to change what his ideals were for anybody like that. Yeah, there we go. Four is to one as mental as the physical. Exactly right.
One of his most famous quotes and long lasting quotes. I find it fascinating that I asked about basketball and I got program stuff from each one of you. I think which speaks of his genius, because that program stuff allows the X's and O's, the motion offense, the man-to-man defense, to work at its finest. And Rick, there was a take in earlier in the chat that said something about he did recruit the players that he wanted. Everyone says he did, and I think it's accurate. He did more with less, but he sometimes wanted less, as you said, because he knew that was going to be able. They were going to be able to be on the help line. They were going to close out correctly. They were going to block out. They were going to do those things, and that he could elevate their play. I want to piggyback on the taking care of your players. My brother-in-law was asked to walk on in the 93-94 season after his football season, Ross Hales. And I have a bunch of stories, some I can share and some I told Ross I would never share, that are just great stories. But, the thing that I appreciate the most about Coach Knight with his relationship with his players, Ross played for him for about 6 months. I worked his camp later, and went up, and they were getting pictures taken, and my buddy of mine said, let's go get a picture taken. And then he told Coach Knight, hey, Coach Tonsoni is related to Ross Hales. And all of a sudden Coach Knight puts his arm around me. How's Ross doing? I mean, this kid only played for him for 6 months, got in like 4 minutes of play up at Minnesota when he was the goon and the 54-point blowout. But he said, hey, I hear Ross is going into coaching. Are you sure he wants to do? I mean, all of a sudden he was asking me questions. Here's this basketball mind, this championship coach, and he's asking a guy he just met who's a camp counselor about a former player he had for 6 months. Those are the things, you know, that for me, along with the basketball influence he had on me as a high school basketball coach, those are meaningful things. And I do think that is why he was a basketball genius. There's a lot of strategy out there, Tony and Rick and Ryan, that whether you play zone or man or run flex or whatever else, but it's how you get that communicated and executed. And that's where I think his genius really, really, really stood out. Do we have a favorite? This is hard for me because there's so many, but I wrote down favorite night team or a game or a player. For us, do we have, is there anything? We'll start with Rick and then go back around the horn.
Favorite player for me is always going to be Quinn Buckner, because it's impossible for people today to understand that was the most essential recruit that Bob Knight ever received. Got Quinn Buckner, was a multi-sport star from Thornridge High School in Illinois, which I think they were back-to-back undefeated state champions. Could have gone to UCLA when UCLA was winning all those championships in a row. Could have gone to Michigan. His dad, though, was an IU grad and an educator. And Coach Knight sold Quinn Buckner's dad on him coming to IU for a coach who'd been there for 1 year to believe in his vision of that he was going to make sure he got an education as well as be a really good basketball player. And Buckner coming to IU, they went to the Final Four the first year, then this third year they had the great season until May got hurt, and then he won the championship, and that was he's the guy. I mean, and there's no I won't listen to any other name.
You and I, that's I'm the the fan club president in our community of the Quinn Buckner fan. And you know, I said before you got on, Rick, that what Knight did for me was that was my dad and I when I was 10 years old in 76. We sat down and watched Channel 4, and my dad loved Quinn Buckner. Therefore, Quinn Buckner just became the guy for me. Because
and guess what? He's now on the board of trustees of the chairman of the board of trustees.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Ryan, favorite team, favorite player? I know, like, you guys, you younger guys didn't live through that or weren't, yeah. You know, Rick and I, and a little bit older, witnessed
some of that. I'd say 93 probably was one that I saw them play enough on television out here in Southern California. When it wasn't super sunny, we'd come in and watch basketball occasionally, you know. But Calbert was my favorite player. I loved Calbert. I mean, even from here, I'd watch him as often as I could. I absolutely loved watching Calbert play. So that has to be my answer. Obviously, I don't have as long an extensive history as some of you other guys and didn't get to see them all the time on television. But that was my guy. I loved watching Calbert play.
Tony, as the youngest here on the panel, do you have any favorite teams or players from that era?
Take a shot at my favorite player.
Jared Jeffries.
I was a Jared Jeffries fan, but I was more of Jared Jeffries on the title run. So my favorite Knight player was AJ Guyton.
That makes sense.
There you go.
But my favorite game to watch is probably the UNLV game. But then Syracuse is number two in 87. Like, I've rewatched that so many times, and just envision like that in the modern times of like what Twitter would be doing. And like, you know, I've even envisioned like, what would Ryan tweet if IU won a national championship?
Something that would enrage people. Let's be real. That's something you get me yelled at. I don't know.
But that's a fun game that I'd like to go back and watch at least once a year. A lot of times I'll watch it the night before March Madness starts. But yeah, I mean, it just, like I said, I've watched so much of like old film thanks to the folks that throw them up on YouTube. That it's, I don't have necessarily have a favorite team just because I've watched various, but that 87 game and really that 87 run is a ton of fun for me to go back on.
Yeah, one of my favorite things that we've done was during the COVID year, we didn't have a tournament. Ooh. We did rewatches of famous tournament games, and I got to see a couple of the Knight games that I hadn't seen before. I'd never seen the 76 championship game. So to get to watch that and rewatch them beating Shaq in the you know, and just
in Boise, I was at that game.
Yeah, I mean, just such a fun game. It really was. And you know, I just remember everybody loved Shaq at that time. So Indiana was kind of the bad guy in that one because everybody loved watching Shaq play. And you know, just some of those. There were a couple others that were just so much fun to watch those. And those teams played so damn hard. Like, you know, there was the skill and there was all of that and the talent and the offense was always run beautifully and all of that, but they just played so hard. Like, it gave me the feeling of opposing teams playing Indiana sometimes had to be like that scene from Rudy where he's in the trainer's room just getting taped all over his body because you knew when you played in a Knight team. It was a lot like when you played Knight when he was at Ohio State. You knew you played him. So that was a lot of fun. All of those were a great, you know, trip down memory lane there.
For me, I've seen three championships. 87, I was a sophomore. Those memories of running to the fountain and greeting the team the next day, just a tremendous. 81 with my guy on there was Ray Tolbert. I loved him running down the one-hand dunks that he used to throw down. But I came to love Indiana basketball in 1975 with that team, watching it on Channel 4 with Dad and Quinn Buckner and Bobby Wilkerson and that whole group in 76 will forever go down. So as we end segment two here, remembering Coach Knight, and we'll come back in segment three and take some maybe thoughts from the community, the chat, and finish this up. I'm going to ask the panel, how are you going to remember Coach Knight? We'll start with you, Rick.
The most compelling and complicated and complex sports figure I've ever covered. Terrific intellect, great motivator, winner, I guess my only wish would be that in some way he could have controlled some of his behavior or temper in ways that would have allowed him to be even greater. And it, that was the one flaw in him that, you know, that stopped him from achieving even more than he achieved in his career. So, you know, just the every time you thought you had him figured out, he showed you that you didn't.
Ryan, how are you going to remember Coach Knight?
You know, again, as you know, I got to Indiana in 2003, so sort of the hangover from his departure was already starting to clear a little bit. What I'm going to remember about Coach Knight has everything to do with what you guys are talking about, which is your memories of him and how much just the profound impact his life and development of people and getting to watch those teams, what it meant to you guys. And more so than anything to me directly, it's the way people talk about him and whether they were in awe of him, whether they directly saw his humanity, good or bad. He had an impact on everybody he encountered. And I think that's what I'm going to remember about him. It's not basketball. Although that's sort of tangentially related. It's Jared talking about watching games with his dad. It's you, Coach, talking about your dad calling you the night of the 87 championship game. It's Rick, your story where you're sitting at the, you know, at the newspaper and he comes over your shoulder. I mean, that's just, there's so many of those. And it's just little moments that impacted people that they'll never forget. And I think that's the thing I'm going to remember the most, is this was a larger than life figure who meant so much to people on so many different levels, whether it was a small gesture or whether it was a championship. I think that's what it is. And that's who he was. I mean, very rarely in sports, and Rick and I do this for a living, and you meet a lot of people in sports, and very rarely do you meet somebody who, when you actually meet them, are larger than life. And he was one of them. And a lot of people have a reputation that's larger than life. You meet them and you're kind of disappointed. I have a feeling nobody was really that disappointed when they met Coach Knight.
Tony.
Well said.
Yeah. You know, as Ryan said, larger than life figure, you know, and I'm going to use his own words. You know, I ran across an old interview as I was watching things yesterday and I tweeted it out. I think it was with Mark Patrick, had asked him, what does it say under Bob Knight on your tombstone? And he basically kind of thought about it for quite some time. And he said, I think it would simply say he was honest. He did what he thought was right. And he really didn't kiss anybody's ass. And then he pauses. He pauses for quite some time. And then he says, yeah, I think I'd be happy with that. And he said, I might just put a little PS on that epitaph and it would read like this. And every once in a while, he did think that he was wrong. And so it showed some humility that you really never saw from him publicly. And so, you know, it's kind of using his own words, like, and exactly how he wanted to be described is essentially who he was to me. So that's kind of where I'm at with it as well.
Yeah, you know, there's many ways. You guys bring up some good points. For me, it will be, you know, he was great. He was great at what he did. He was who he was, which I think is a great story for all of us. And also that you can be great even if you have some flaws in certain areas. And that humility piece, Tony, then, you know, I think he was probably aware of that. And, you know, there will be a time when everyone will go back over and talk about the full context of his career. Tonight, we were just going to sit back and remember Coach Knight. But for me, just an outstanding leader who was able to get the most out of people, and then he cared about those people. And so that's the positive side of him, and that's the side that I'm going to remember going forward. I thank all of you for those thoughts and those memories. Coming up on Assembly Call Radio, we'll take some questions out of the chat. There, we moved to the Substack and we didn't get a whole lot of questions today, and I don't know what kind of questions we have on a night like this, but we'll stick around for a few minutes after that. Stick with us here on Assembly Call Radio. All right, Rick, if you want to stick around, you can. Rick, I don't know how much longer we're going to go. If there's any questions in the chat. Okay, we'll get this kick started and try to get out of here in the next 15 minutes or so. All right, we'll just jump right in it.
Just roll right in.
Yep.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
Welcome back to Assembly Call Radio. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, back here with Tony Adranya, Ryan Phillips, and Rick Bozich as we remember the man, Bob Knight, after he passed away yesterday. If you're in the chat, live chat, and you have something you would like to ask any of us, go ahead and try to throw that in. We'll try to get to some here in the next 10 or 15 minutes. We'll go to Brett, and we'll throw this out, whoever wants to answer. Does the passing of Coach Wood, of Coach Knight impact Coach Woodson's tenure at IU? Thoughts? Is it going to make any difference, or
I don't see it making any difference. I think Coach Woodson has kind of had a time frame in mind when he took the job, and I don't think this affects that personally. But obviously, just speaking from personal opinion, not from anything sourced or anything like that.
If anything, yeah. I think it enhances his want to win. He wants Indiana basketball back in winning ways. He wanted to do it anyway, and he wanted to do it for Coach Knight. But now that Coach Knight is gone, I think it enhances what he came back to do. I think that would be the impact.
Yeah, I think it might add a little extra motivation to some of the veterans on the team as well this year. Trey and Xavier Johnson, who know what that means. I mean, the younger guys, I'm sure, know what it means, but they know Woodson a little better and know how important that is. And so I think that there may be a little extra oomph there. I think if anything, it just enhances things.
I think it'll be another reason for him to talk to the players about who Coach Knight was and why he was so important and what it means to be an Indiana basketball player. That's what I think.
Again, put your questions in there for the next 10 or 15 minutes. We're probably going to stay away from exhibition and recruiting news tonight. We can do that after we officially end the show. I can answer some of those questions traveling Hoosier. But does this help end the divide that's been some of the basketball between some of that old guard and new guard? Woodson has done a good job of, I think, bringing the fan base back. Is this a soothing, we never want someone to leave us, but is this going to help continue to do what Coach Woodson has done by his hire? Rick, we'll start.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he already did it by not only having Archie was the coach when he came back for the Purdue game, but him having Coach Knight come to practice on a regular basis the last couple of years, having Buckner and May around more than they were before, and Whitman and those guys, having Scott Dolson, a former IU student manager, being there and understanding it all. It's been gravitating in that direction for a number of years, and a lot of the people who were older Coach Knight, only people, aren't around anymore. And I think that the fan base is more unified than it has been in a long time. And most people that are around IU basketball, their primary interest is, just win, just get back to doing what Coach Knight did, which was win.
Yeah, I'll say this. I think that, and I've thought this since Woodson was the coach, but I think this even enhances it more, is that I think it's going to make life a lot easier on whoever comes next. Because, I'm not, counting down the days till Woodson's gone, but we all know he's not going to be here for another 15 years. So I do think that now that all of this is out of the way, that Coach Knight came back, all these older, players have come back and been involved in the programming. Coach Knight was doing things like being at practice, and now he's passed on, seemingly at peace with the university. I think whoever comes next is going to have a lot easier job uniting that fan base. I really do. And I've thought that. It's funny. I thought that when Archie came back, or when he came back under Archie, and it's really funny to think that Woodson was there. And I it has crossed my mind, was he measuring the office curtains at that, in that meetup? Maybe just kind of eyeing a few things, like, well, I'd, I'd move the bench a little to the right there, and then I'd do the, you know, so it was interesting that the guy was in the arena that day when Knight came back. But I do think that it's just going to make life easier for Indiana basketball moving forward. Everything, not his passing, but everything that's happened over the last 4 years, I think, really will be a transformative experience for this program that for a long time, it felt like a fracture existed. And, you know, my entire experience at Indiana from 2003 till he came back in 2020, the entire time felt like there was just a big split in the fan base, in the former players, in everything. And that sort of has slowly melted away. So
Dale says that he knows several people who quit watching after the Coach Knight left that are now starting to come back under Coach Woodson. So
again, I mean, there were people that when I would drive from when I lived in New Albany to Bloomington for games that were flying Texas Tech flags in their yards. And
yep. Stuff. Yeah, I remember that. I was there for
those are weird times.
Yeah. it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine Coach Knight in Lubbock. It still is. I know it happened for years, but it's still an odd thing to imagine. It's hard to imagine anybody in Lubbock, quite frankly. But Coach Knight, just I mean, it seems like it's just an odd fit.
Do we feel? I know the family and Coach didn't want any memorial service or anything like that. Is there a chance of any kind of permanent? Remembrance of Coach Knight in or around Assembly Hall, or is that something that that is not needed? A couple people in the chat thought about they mentioned a statue or naming this or naming that. Is that something, Rick, you think the family would want or IU would want? Should they do that? I mean, this guy was Indiana basketball for so long, and as Coach Woodson said, still kind of is Indiana basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know Patrick well enough to know, or Tim, or his wife Karen, but I think a lot of his former players, especially the ones who were there in the early years, would like it there. There's the statue with the six guys from the 76 team, and, you know, he should have been part of that. I'm sure it wasn't done because at the time they knew his wishes were not to be associated with IU basketball. That's but exactly. Some of the wounds have healed, and I think a statue is certainly something that should be. Should happen.
Yeah, I think that the further we get away from some of the controversy, the more palatable that becomes for everybody. And I think the university is cognizant of some of those things. But at the same time, I think that, you know, the man is no longer here. I think that it's perfectly fine to honor him in some way, if for nothing else than to have an image of him frozen in time, that's not throwing a chair, that's not berating an official. Find a great moment from his career and make that the image people see. If I had to say, I don't believe the court will be named after him. I don't believe the arena will be named after him unless they move to another arena, which I've advocated for years. We won't get into that. But that, you know, until they do that, I think that everything's going to stay as is, as far as that goes. But a statue is certainly something that, that would be, yeah, they should name the officials' locker room should be named after Bob Knight. No, but I do think a statue is what makes the most sense. And to put it even outside, you know, under an overhang or something, though it's the first thing people see when they enter or something like that, I think that would be a fitting tribute.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks forget that the court is named after somebody already. I've seen a lot of that talking about the court and stuff. But, you know, that's to me, that wouldn't be the right thing to do, is just rip Branch McCracken off of the court. You know, I've said, like, you know, maybe the athletic complex, like the whole, you know, Memorial Stadium and Cook Hall and Assembly Hall and all that, maybe they could name that something after him if you're thinking about naming things. But to me, yeah, some sort of statue of some sort. I had heard, again, not well-sourced info, that he wasn't really interested in anything in that, and his family wasn't super interested in that. And, you know, and if that's what he wants, like, by all means, they should absolutely respect that. Yeah. Right. So, you know, I'm all for, you know, getting creative. Like, the administration's in place right now for something to happen. If you know, if that was going to come to fruition. You know, you've got Dolson and Woodson and those guys. So to me, I think they're well aware of wanting to honor him, but at the same time, you know, being cognizant of what he wished and his family wished as well.
Fellas, as we wrap up this night of remembrance of Coach Knight, I'm just going to send it back around for final thoughts, and you can take that wherever you want. I'll start it off, and then I'll wrap up the show after all of you are done. Coach Knight was Indiana basketball, and Indiana basketball struggled since he's left. It's on its way back. How quick? We can have a whole show about that and talk about that, but you do get the feeling – I know from 76 and 87 when I was in college and that it's starting to feel like that. Again, I credit, you know, Coach Woodson for doing what he can to make that happen. But Coach Knight was just bigger than anything. You know, Ryan's talked about his impact. I think that's just a great way to look at that. And as a coach myself, and anyone who's in a profession, you want to be great. And you can take a lot of what Coach Knight has done on the court with his players, behind the scenes, Huber's down there in Louisville, all those things we talked about tonight. And he was great. And he was great. And you can learn from that. And that's how I'm going to go forward. And I wish his family nothing but the best. The Indiana basketball family, I know a lot of players and coaches are grieving in their own ways. You know, thoughts and prayers and sympathies out to everyone involved with that. Tony, final thoughts.
Yeah, my final thoughts are, and I just want to take a moment that, you know, whatever foundation that the family's asking for donations for, Alzheimer's is a nasty, nasty disease, you know, along with dementia. And so I would encourage, if you have the means to donate to that, to find ways to you know, help mitigate that disease, because it's nasty and you're stripped of your mind, and you know, it's just rough. It's hard. And so to me, that, you know, I've seen folks struggle with that were close to me. And so it hits a little bit close to home in that regard. And so that's kind of what I want to end with is, you know, I know that IU put out that there was some sort of foundation they would ask folks to give to. I would just encourage taking a long, hard look at that. If you have the means, do. And, you know, as Coach said, Bob Knight was, and I think Mike Woodson even says was and is Indiana basketball. And, you know, may he rest in peace.
Ryan.
Yeah. I mean, a giant has passed. And, you know, anytime that happens, that's just a momentous day for everybody involved. And I appreciate all the remembrances. Rick wrote a great piece about it. I think I'd encourage everybody to go read it. There have been some others all over the place. Go read as much as you can, especially if you're like me and, you know, you didn't grow up in Indiana. You weren't around when he was, you know, having his greatest seasons and all that. I would just encourage everybody to learn as much as you can about him. You know, it's certainly a different world a day later than it was yesterday. And I, again, just encourage everybody to sort of, before you make judgments about a person, you learn as much as you can about them. Your opinion may not change, but I think it's worth, if we're going to make pronouncements about somebody, learn every aspect about them. And as I said to open the show, I mean, one of the most human people ever. You know, certainly in his faults and his successes were on display for the world to see at all times. And he meant a lot to a lot of people. He was a villain to a lot of people. But I think that he was a human being, and human beings have flaws and they have great things about them as well. And I think that we can all sort of, you know, take what we want from Coach Knight. It's a canvas on which to find your personal thoughts about him, and you can find a justification for just about anything. But he is a man who certainly meant a lot to a lot of people. And I think that anybody who passes on from the world having made that big an impact can be proud of what they've accomplished.
I'd go along with what Ryan said. Read Bob Hamill's biography of Bob Knight. Read Frank DeFord's profile called The Rabbit Hunter.
It's a great piece.
Sports Illustrated, which really gets inside of his psyche. Learn as much as you can on him, not just some of the crazy YouTube clips of him going off at press conferences on stupid sports writers like me asking dumb questions. At his peak, he was Indiana University in a lot of ways. I mean, he was the face of Indiana University. Certainly, he commanded the attention of the entire state. He commanded the attention of all of college basketball. It was like, what does Knight think? What's Knight doing? What did Knight do, you know, in this situation? And the other takeaway I would have is, look at the legacy that he had of the guys who played for him and what they have ended up doing in their lives, whether they're doctors, they're businessmen, they're educators, they're pro team executives, whatever. I mean, you could, the list of success stories of guys that played for Coach Knight is pretty staggering if you take your time to research it. And that was certainly a credit to the players who were raised by their parents. But Coach Knight made sure that when you came to Indiana, you were going to be a basketball player, but you were going to be a student in the university and take the academic part of it very seriously. And I don't think we always see that. We didn't see it back then, but he made sure that was the case.
That's going to do it. Thanks, Tony, for being here and your well-thought comments. Ryan, the same to you. And Rick, always good to talk to you. And thanks for sharing your stories. Bob Knight, Indiana University basketball coach, 3 national championships. May you rest in peace. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Assembly Call Radio. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for this live broadcast of the Assembly Call Radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. Until then.
Take it from me, Yogi Ferrell. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
All right, fellas. That's a good job right today.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Enjoyed it. See you.
All right. See you guys. Bye. Take care.
Yeah. Bye. Thanks, everyone who is in the chat mob. Appreciate it. Well done. Make sure you go to our Substack for the new community. If you have any information, reach out to Jared or anyone except for Ryan. We could point you in the right spot on that. It's looking good.
I got enough going on. I don't need another website to log on to. Everybody go do it.
Yeah, on the show, but we do have an exhibition game tomorrow. We will be back with a post-game show after that to talk some basketball. But we hope we were able to help you through whatever you're feeling about Coach Knight, and hope we did it professionally enough for you. I lost a little sleep on how to do this. It hit hard and it hit late on Wednesday. And so I hope that we provided something for all of you. Ryan, did you have something?
Oh, I was just going to say, who's going to be on for the post-game show tomorrow?
I think Andy and I. I know I'm hosting. I might just do it solo. I don't know.
Yeah, I might. I'm going to try and hop on. It's a weird time here. It's at 3:30, so it's just a weird time, so I'll try and hop on.
Yep, I know I'm hosting, so. All righty, everybody. Have a good evening. Bless you all. Be safe. Hug your loved ones. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you guys.
Bye, guys.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader, too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.